to talk about what's being done with missing ET at the LHC. It's a lot of stuff, so I kind of chose a few things. But before that, I wanted to congratulate Dan and USCMS and Atlas for the award Dan got. And, of course, he sent around this picture.
I just accepted the award. The award is for the collaboration.
Okay, the collaboration, Atlas and CMS. And since the award was for the collaboration, he decided to send it the number of times he has collaborators. Okay, let's move on. So most of the stuff I'm going to say here is basically done by my Atlas and CMS colleagues and very well documented in the Atlas and CMS TDR and some of the notes. And then I found a very useful note on sort of trying to disentangle missing energy lookalikes and the intro of that. So I took some from there. So all the references are listed here. I don't have to convince why we need missing energy after Martin's talk, so all I'm going to say that people in Washington are also looking for that, and I think they have evidence for missing energy. We don't. So basically... So we have to find it before they establish it, and... So what are the sources of missing energy? So the missing energy from neutrinos, probably from direct decays of new heavy particles to neutrinos, and most of the times they may be accompanied by WZs or gammas, etc. Or missing energy originates from one weakly interacting exotic particle in the final state, for instance, modeled with textual dimensions, predicted graviton, and that leads to monojets plus large missing ET in case of strong production. There could be many weakly interacting exotic particles in the final state giving us missing ET, or the example of SUSY, which is basically most studied, and the one which I'm going to take is the one where missing ET originates from two weakly interacting exotic particles in the final state. I'm not going to go through this, but just say that most of the studies which have been done have a combination of missing energy, many jets and leptons in the final states, and depending on how many you have, there are different types of searches, but as also Martin pointed out, that missing energy could be also from two or so weakly interacting heavy particles in the final states. So if you look at the SUSY signature and this signature, there are lots in common, so any of the SUSY signatures which have been studied at the LHC, we can forget about the signal model, but use the techniques which have been developed for doing the searches and apply them to any new particle searches which give us missing energy in the final state. So that's what the tactic I'm going to take. I'm going to try to show you some missing SUSY searches with missing ET in the final state, but I don't want you to interpret it as SUSY, but you can interpret it as the techniques for understanding the standard model backgrounds with large missing energies, and then you can put in your favorite model to see whether it applies. So most of the searches which have been documented in the Atlas and CMS notes over the years are kind of summarized here in this table. So depending on the number of leptons, taus, or bees, and the number of jets, those studies have been done by both Atlas and CMS. And here, what I'm going to talk about, I can't talk about everything here in the limited time. So I selected the one with zero leptons and two, three, and four jets, and one lepton and four jet mode, just to give you an idea of the techniques which we use to understand the standard model background and any excess of large missing energy events. In all these analyses, the dominant backgrounds are W plus jets, top pair production, Z to new new plus jets, Z to dileptone plus jets, and QCD multi jets. So let's skip this. So I'll start with one lepton plus jets plus missing energy signatures. And here, so if you were to start with the SUSY example, thoroughly studied both by Atlas and CMS. In this case, the dominant backgrounds here, the cross sections are listed here. The top pair is about 800 picobar, W plus jets is 10 times larger. QCD is even gazillion times larger. Z plus jets. And the SUSY cross-sections are your model with whatever heavy neutral particles you have, could be the order of a few to a few hundred picobarns. So if you were to follow this cascade decay here, which gives us one lepton and jets and missing energy, then the first cut which is applied is one fairly high PT jet and four or more jets with 50 GV or so, and that basically cuts down some of the QCD background, but it's still one of the largest ones. So requiring the lepton makes the signal to background even better, and you ask that there be no second lepton, and that makes the QCD background here go away quite a bit. And the W plus jets background is the larger one of these. Then there are other games people play. Then you ask for large missing ET, because these SUSY signals all have large missing ET. After you make those cuts, then basically top pair and W plus jets are the backgrounds which survive. So now most of the studies I'm going to show you are trying to understand how to get rid of these top pair and W plus jet backgrounds. Here is, after some cuts, you can see just the missing energy. I'm saying you apply a cut on GV missing energy. So the SUSY signal in this case is in the is here with the open circles and has fairly large missing energy. The background is this black histogram, the total background, which consists of TT bar, which is in blue, and W plus jets, which is in red. And you can see that the background sort of tapers out around 500 or so, whereas the signal has fairly large missing energy. But to get these background predictions is basically where the hardest part is, and you can put any of your model here. It doesn't matter. In this case, it's SUSY. So the issues with background prediction is that we don't really have clean standard model control samples if SUSY exists, because that becomes part of your background. And you have to understand the shape of the standard model background at high missing ET, but the Monte Carlo could be unreliable. We really don't know. So most of the work which has gone in the last few years is trying to understand ways of determining the high missing energy background or the backgrounds to these signals in a data-driven method. And so two different regions are defined: a control region, which is dominated by standard model, and there could be small signal contamination, and a signal region, which is dominated by your SUSY in this case, the studies I'm going to show, or any new particle, plus a very small contamination from your background. So I said that for this analysis, where you have one lepton, jets, four or more jets, and missing energy, we have TT bar and W plus jets as the largest backgrounds left. So the few handles we have to study the W boson background is using the transverse mass constructing from missing ET and the lepton PT. And to get rid of top background, we can actually reconstruct the top mass from the lepton, missing ET, and the jets in the event. So if you use those plus the missing ET in the event to understand how they behave in the control region as well as in the signal region. So the idea is that, so I'm going to go through a few different methods. This is the first method, where you basically, in this you have a region of missing ET versus your transverse mass of the W, and you have a low missing ET here. This is the low missing ET region for the full range of transverse mass versus a low transverse mass region for a full range of missing ET. You call it your control region here in this corner, and then you try to extrapolate what the contribution of the background is going to be in your signal region by sort of applying various types of fits. And in one of the most recent ATLAS studies, what they've done is they've taken three variables, missing ET, the transverse mass, and the top mass, and they have done a combined fit to the background control region and then predicted and extrapolated what the contamination of the background is in the signal region. So basically, they construct a 3D model of these backgrounds, Here is the background here for, this is W plus jets, this is a TT bar with dileptons, and the top part is the TT bar with lepton plus jets mode. And this is in the control region, the shapes of the backgrounds. So when they do all this combined fit and they predict a background in the signal region, but if there is SUSY present, then you have to also figure out how much SUSY is contaminating your control regions, and then when you predict your background estimation would be larger. Okay, so there are various methods, and basically you take the top four jets and then you make these permutations where you try to construct the top mass which is closest to the actual measured top mass for the hadronic and the leptonic. And in the leptonic, you also have to solve for the neutrino, so you have a quadratic equation and you take the one, if you have real solutions, you take the one with the lower PZ with the neutrino.
So,
here. Okay, so... so now one has to understand how much SUSY is, or your new whatever your signal is with missing ET is in your background sample. And in this case, Atlas studied different SUSY signatures, for instance, different models in the control region here, which is to the left, and the signal region to the right. So plot of missing ET on the top and the transverse mass of the W on the bottom here. And you see in the control regions, these different models sort of look similar. So they basically can do the same thing. Well, within errors, that you know, there's always for experimentalists, we have to color our eyes with a band around these, so we kind of get used to imagining things around and be consistent. So this is consistent within errors, right? Okay. Okay. So I mean, SU4 is not listed here because that point doesn't follow. So in this case, you can see the similarities here in the control region, and then you can extrapolate in the signal region, and then you correct your background down for the SUSY contamination, else your background estimation would be higher. So for instance, in these cases, for the backgrounds where you have the lepton plus jets or dileptons or W plus jets, this is the extrapolated yield in the signal region by this method and the true yield in the signal region, and sort of they're consistent. So these are all Monte Carlos, and therefore you know that you have some confidence in these methods to the statistical precision allowed by your data control samples. Yes.
Sorry, so what is this? Can you say something about what is this?
So here what they do is they say that, okay, I look at the three variables I'm fitting to, and I'm going to add SUSY into the control sample, and then I'm going to iteratively fit to subtract it out.
So these four
SUSY models here, and they say they are the same, so they just take the average of this and they extrapolate for that. But if you have another model which doesn't follow and agree, then you have to use, you have to rely on the Monte Carlo, and you have to get the shapes for that from there and extrapolate. You know, so this is a technique by which you can correct for it. It may not apply to every possible signal. Yes. Yeah, so first you do the whole thing with without SUSY, and you get your background estimation, and then you put in your SUSY contamination given the cross sections, etc., predicted by the model, and you put that in, and then you subtract
so
that.
They must be relying on shapes.
Yes, they are fitting these shapes. They are fitting these shapes. They are fitting a 3D shape. Yeah, so go ahead.
Yes.
I don't have plots for that. And so you do an iterative fit.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're not claiming discovery after the first.
No,
step.
No, no.
You're
you have to do an iterative fit.
To massage your
this
data.
Is
that,
yes.
This is down to understand how.
No.
Okay.
You do an iterative fit.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be self-consistent.
No. But you must have to.
Okay, I don't have these plots, but. Okay. You know what? Yes, it's basically what we do for the top section as well, measurement. So I'm going to, maybe I'll. Okay, so what I could do is I could prepare a slide or two from what they have done, and the details I kind of did not keep it as a backup either, but you can really see that this iterative fit really gets your, you overestimate your background if you don't subtract this contamination and lose sensitivity.
For SU4, it did not work.
No, it did not work for SU4 because it's,
so it's
more like TT-bar.
Method.
No, it's not a foolproof method. That's why there are different types of methods. What I want you to see is that when you are, so there are two issues here. One is, can we predict our background from the standard model without any signal contamination, and that works out. But your signal will always be contaminating your control sample, and the question is how much it is contaminating. It depends on your particular model. And then you have to be able to somehow predict that, else you lose sensitivity. In this case, we know that these four SUSY points you can take care of. A few others, like the SU4 point, you can't take care of. And so you develop and look at different methods of estimating your background and contamination. And at the end of the day, if you apply three different techniques and different variables, you'll hopefully come to, you know, iteratively to a prediction of standard model background, which will agree.
So
having
you say
how
what happens with the SU4 point?
Pardon? Yeah, so if you look at the Atlas studies, they show that it actually doesn't work.
Yeah, so how does it fail, the SU4?
Because it looks a lot of like TT bar, so they can't, so they have the iterative fit has loses sensitivity and can't predict as much.
I see.
So suppose you observe 2 sigma fluctuation up.
So this is for background,
then
right?
Of the background,
yeah.
Up, right? And then you treat it as an excess, and then you know this method will just grow this significance.
No. This will not grow the significance.
No.
When you're subtracting your signal out from the background region. If you have no signal in your control region, then you're overestimating your background in the signal region.
Yeah, so
that's
he's
right.
Right.
Yeah, so next iteration.
Background only method, we observe 2 sigma, we say, hey, it's almost SUSY, right? And
then you subtract it, and then you can.
The significance grows, and then we subtract a little more, and significance grows again.
But at some point, you have to test this model, and at some point, you have to make sure that it's stable, right? You know, what you're saying is you can create.
Always,
no.
It will always in
asymptotically no.
Increase it. The significance.
Yes.
No, it's a stable. You can't.
If your signal you're looking for looks the same as your background, right? Because otherwise, the signal region and the control region aren't going
to
match.
But the only way that if you try to account for signal in your control region, right? When you try to do that, you're only increasing the amount of signal in your signal.
Okay.
It
is partial. Yes.
Which is accepted. I think you should let it go on to other methods.
Yes.
This is dangerous thing because
let me say it. None of these methods you will see are foolproof.
Yeah.
Each one of them have their shortcomings. In that one, you know, you have to have a stable 3D model which predicts the tails very well. So they have a different. We have a different model, which is the HT2 method. And where the HT2 is defined as the sum PT of three jets in the four-jet system, excluding the highest PT jet and the PT of the lepton. You exclude the highest PT jet because you want it uncorrelated with the missing ET. You think that the mismeasurement of that highest PT jet will give you missing ET. And they also use the missing ET significance defined like this here. So in this case, there is this 2D space which is defined, which is the missing ET significance versus HT2, and the control regions again are these lower regions, and the signal region is the top right region. And you can try to, from the shape of the HT2 versus missing ET, here you can predict how much background is in your signal region. And here is the missing ET significance plotted for the SUSY signal here, which is the true SUSY signal, which is the open circles always. And for the background here prediction, which is TT bar in blue, the estimated W plus jets in TT bar, which is the black one, and the histogram then adds up the SUSY one too. So you try to predict your background in the signal region, and then you subtract it, and what they've done is shown the missing ET significance for the estimated signal compared to what it is for the true one. And you can see for high missing ET significance, it sort of agrees. So here they have not subtracted in this way. But again, you know, the error bars are large and it's some amount of scatter, so yeah.
Just a question to make sure I'm following you. So this seems, the way I understand this, this sounds a little different from the last
yes.
one in the sense that this seems more like another cut to reduce background rather
yes.
than a way of,
yeah, so they're two different
not really
things.
Addressing contamination in the background region.
No, it
is.
It's
more a straight, we're just trying to reduce the background.
You're just using, yes, and also you're trying to reduce by cutting on the missing ET significance at the end. Yes. So it's a cut as well as a prediction from the data-driven methods, right? You want to get the normalization correct, how many events they are.
And what is missing ET
Missing ET significance is the missing ET divided by 0.49 times square root of some ET.
Okay.
So,
how did they choose that?
I think to get the resolution and the is Greg gonna? That's the resolution of missing ET for Atlas. Yeah. Okay. So after so those two methods remove mostly your TT bar and W plus jets, TT bar semi-leptonic and W plus jets background. After doing those cuts or those methods, one realized that the dileptone TT bar background is still there, and it's a hard one to get rid of. And in there are very there are many cases where this dileptone background contributes to the single lepton plus missing ET plus jets, where one lepton could be tau, or this lepton could be misidentified, it could be within the jet, or it could be out of your acceptance, or both leptons could be tau, etc. So there are different categories of why this dileptone signature contributes to your one lepton plus missing ET. And so to get rid of that, one tries to reconstruct the dileptone events here. And so you get your control sample. We know there are lots of top two dileptone events. You go and select top two opposite charge leptons and events with three or more jets. And then you can try to solve the system. These are top events control sample, and you can try to understand which one of these jets are the B jet pairs. And after you do that, then your TT bar events, this is what's plotted here, is the number of B jet pairs in this solution here. And you can, this is for TT bar events, and this is for the rest of your background and SUSY events. So by cutting on the events with larger number of B jet pairs, you can clean up your control sample and try to make it even more TT bar like. Now when you have dileptone TT bar events selected, what you try to do is you go back to the Monte Carlo and you can say, let's lose a lepton, let's replace this lepton with a tau, let's put this lepton inside the jet, etc. And you try to model, or what they call the re-simulation or re-decay of these events. So it's kind of a concoction between data and Monte Carlo here. So you start out with selecting your data events, and then you replace your lepton with Monte Carlo partners there, and to simulate the event type you're looking for, and get your background estimation from there. So this is shows you this is for your SUSY signal, the missing energy, and the background estimate is these black points here, and the red one is, in this case, it's an overestimate due to the SUSY signal, and then you can try to take the contamination out, and that's your blue histogram, which then agrees with your background. And in this case, they've used the iterative method, which I explained earlier, to take out the SUSY signal. So, yes, you know, all of these have some kind of problems. But so I'm going to move on now from one lepton. Do I have time or I've taken away?
In these conferences, the first approximation, don't worry very much about time.
Good.
Although maybe I'll be corrected by...
Just one more example, and then... So the other example I have is, in that case, we cleaned up some of the backgrounds because of requiring a lepton, and cases there are just missing jets and missing energy in some of the models. And so again, if you start from here, in this case, I'll go over four jets plus missing energy, and again, you require the jet PTs, and you cut down some on your QCD background. Then you require missing ET, and the QCD background goes even smaller, but not that small. You can do a lepton veto, and in that case, most of your backgrounds are of similar strength, top pair, W plus jets, QCD, and Z plus jets. And then you can cut down on QCD by requiring some kind of angular separation between your jets and missing ET, or leptons and missing ET, and that cuts down your QCD background. So again, you're left with top pair, W plus jets and Z plus jets, and in this case, you only have jets and missing energy, no leptons, and this is, for the SUSY signal, the missing energy plot, compared to the standard model background prediction, which is the black hash histogram. So how do we estimate the backgrounds? So one of the big backgrounds is Z to nu plus jets. And in this case, it's data-driven. Both TMS and Atlas do the same. You start with Z to mu plus jet events, and you replace the dinuons here with missing energy, and you try to predict how many events you'll find in the high missing ET region. Again, there are a few caveats here. The Z to mu events are, the coverage is basically limited by your detector, muon detector coverage here, whereas the neutrinos are not, so you have to correct for that. You have to also correct for your lepton ID efficiencies, etc., so all of those little things have to go in the normalization of the number of events in your background sample. But the idea here is you take the muons and you replace them with neutrino. So in the three jets plus missing energy, again, you require three jets and lots of angular separation to cut out your QCD background. And in this case, what's plotted here is M effective, which is the effective mass of the particle you're looking for one of the SUSY signatures, and the backgrounds here. And the backgrounds here, again, is this one is QCD, the purple one, and the Z to nu plus TT bar are the red ones. The way to estimate the backgrounds in three jets plus missing ET signatures is you start again with the Z to mu plus two jets sample, and then you estimate how many events you would have for Z to mu bar plus three jets from the data by looking at the spectrum of Z plus jets cross-section as a function of number of jets. So you use that to go from the Z to mu to two jets to three jets normalization, and then you do the event counts, etc., for the ratio of Z to mu to Z to nu from theory or other measurements. So you can estimate your Z to nu plus three jet background. Also, you can do the same games for W to tau to nu plus two or more jets by normalizing it to the number of Z to mu. And by doing these estimates, backwards here for a second. You get these estimations for the Z to mu and TT bar backgrounds. So the last one is the digits plus missing energy signature, which I want to talk about, where this variable called MT2 is defined, because basically what you have is two particles which are neutral, which are giving you missing energy, and so you try to play games where you assign you take the missing energy and you assign fractions of those two to the two missing particle, missing PT, and then you make the invariant mass of those two particles, of the jets and the missing ET, and you play games with taking the maximum, etc., and you define this thing called MT2, which has large values and this tail for your signal, and low, it's low for your standard model backgrounds. And again, The backgrounds are W, TT bar, and Z plus jets. Z to nu plus jets is one of the largest ones. So there's been studied this recent study for digest plus missing energy using a different tactic by CMS, which follows the definition of this kinematic variable, which is called alpha, which is just the ET of the second jet divided by the invariant mass of the two jet pair. And for this alpha variable can be at most 0.5 for QCD or less. And if it's greater than 0.5, then it's correlated with high missing energy events. And then you also define another quantity, which is called alpha transverse, which is, again, the ET of the second jet divided by the transverse mass of the two-jet system. And in this case, for QCD, digest alpha sub T is 0.5. And you can look at, you can cut on these variables to select your events. In the digest plus missing energy, I'm not going to go through all these triggers, but show you the HT of these events. And in here, the QCD background is the largest background. Your signal is down here, and your Z to nu nu is also a fairly hefty signal. This the QCD background is gotten rid of easily by looking at these variables, alpha and alpha transverse. So what's plotted here is this alpha variable in this top left corner, top right is alpha transverse, and you can foresee for QCD, it really cuts off at 0.5. So it's a very good variable in these digest events to remove QCD, and again, your signal and Z plus jet backgrounds remain. And these Z plus jet backgrounds, Z to nu nu plus jet backgrounds, can be estimated just by, as I mentioned earlier, by replacing your dileptons with neutrinos, or you could also take another control sample, which is W to L nu plus jets, where you take the lepton here and replace it with a neutrino. Or you could use the gamma plus jet events here, and you drop the photon, and that mimics your missing energy. So there are different ways of estimating the background for Z, which is Z to nu nu plus two jets here, and all the strengths and weaknesses are listed here. For instance, the dileptron ones, it's very clean and easy to select, but you're statistically limited. W plus jets, you have a lot of events, but then it's not so clean because you may have signal contamination. And gamma plus jets may be the one which probably wins at the end of the day, but it may not be very clean for low PT photon events. And here are some studies which was done by CMS where you look for very high PT photon samples, and what's plotted here is the PT of the W jet jet, the boson in the W jet jet, gamma jet jet, or Z jet jet. Red is Z jet jet, and the green one is W jet jets, and gamma is jet jet is blue here. And you can use these gamma plus jet jet events here and try to predict your background by replacing the photon with the neutrinos. And you can see here that this is your missing ET. Like it's called, because there you're simulating the missing ET, applying that for the Z to mu nu, and your predicted spectrum from gamma plus jets, and for high missing ET, it does a pretty good job. So there are various regions where different methods can provide estimation.
Yeah. The fragmentation distribution. This is
Yes. Oh, yeah. This is full. Yes. This one is. So,
could we go back?
Yes, you can.
I don't.
Okay.
I don't understand how this photon is being used yet.
So you just just say that photon plus jets or Z plus jets have similar topology. So here, you can just take this photon and replace it with your missing ET vector, and that's all. It's being done. So you take the photon plus jet events for high PT, and you just drop the photon and use the photon PT as the missing PT for your event to simulate this.
And then you normalize to the Z cross-section at some point somewhere?
Okay, so here you basically, you normalize it for this very high.
Oh, I see. Okay, so you are using some...
Yes, theoretical input.
Some sort of theoretical input then at a certain point here, and...
In fact, it's a debate which you would like to have feedback on.
So.
Because it's easy to change a branching ratio for a Z to renormalize, because that's well known. But here it's changing one factor goes on for another.
Right.
And
exactly.
Do
that
not believe it would work.
Okay.
Do not believe it would work so well, perhaps for the low PT, but for the high PT, that's you know, it's a question to the theoretical community.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's,
so,
if that's kosher enough.
Also, this plot here, which I kind of skipped because is this ratio of the gamma to the z. So it's kind of flat at fairly high PT, but not quite.
Right.
So this is the issue. So
that's
something which we need to understand.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That is. So this region we need to understand, and this is as preliminary and in progress. So anyway, I tried to give you some flavor of some of the analyses which have been done and can be generalized to any new model with missing energy, and that's it. Thanks.
Are there any more? Jack.
I always have a question.
Sure.
But I have a certain thing that I want to think about during
mm-hmm.
this meeting. Other people have other things, but what I want to think about is, you know, how would theorists and experimentalists work together to decide whether or not there was a new signal in your data? Okay, and at what point would we start to work together? Would we, you know, and this is a wonderful illustration of the subtleties of an analysis and the feedback between, you know, doing control samples and so forth, and I'm just wondering if people have thoughts about this. I mean, you know, the reason that I was interested in this Lepton Jets plus missing energy workshop is I thought it would provide a good framework for understanding
yes.
the issues at any rate. And,
yeah.
and you know, I want everybody to be thinking about that as we go through these talks to say, you know, how would the experimentalists be willing to, you know, give some access to the data to theorists, you know, before they say, "Oh yes, here's the final signal," and so forth. You know,
so
is there
at
some
point,
intermediate
so
zone?
I think the intermediate zone would be that we have to have some zeroth order estimate of our backgrounds, which we feel confident about, before putting out a preliminary result, right? So, and then we have to, of course, you know, say at which point it is before everybody starts, you know. The problem, from my point of view, just personally my point of view, is I don't think so the community shares it, that so for us, when we show these plots, we don't have all the error bars there, right? Systematic errors are never there. And so people get very excited looking at these small 1, 1.5, 2 sigma errors. So if all my theory friends promise me that they will not start getting excited and actually work with us to understand it, what it is, then it would be a good, you know, feedback loop. What my fear is that you show something somebody and they kind of get fixated by the 1 or 2 bins, and that's where the conversation stops. So that's been our you know, prejudice is my prejudice, and we'd like to move on. So what would be good to have is a background estimation, you know, at some points where we know that this is kind of a model-independent background estimation, and then where do we go from there, you know, for the given model? That's where
so,
we should work.
So just more on that, we did devote 1.5 hours plus to discussion of these issues
I just wanted to early on
we should think
get
about
people
it, yeah.
to be thinking about
should
it in the context of the presentations that
yeah.
you're having. So
just I wanted to, while we're laying our cards on the table, we'll just say what I'm thinking about looking at these talks is something I'd like to hear just as things come up and people's reaction to is, you know, when I see something like this, I think about the fact that, you know, you've had SU whatever 1
yeah.
through 8 or whatever you had, whereas just in SUSE, you know, it's at least a 10-parameter family
oh, yeah.
of things. And somehow, you know, that's the world that we're actually living in. I think there's way, way too many models. And so just the question of, it's a really difficult question of how to grapple with that. I think that, you know, of course there's
yeah.
the first issue of just finding a signal. I understand that. That's somewhat independent of this, but once you get to having a signal, that's the problem to face.
Yeah. I mean, we should try to, you know, do more model independent analyses.
Yeah,
which there is another one on that as well, so we won't go there. So, yeah. David has a question?
To follow up on
yeah.
Jack's comment. I think unlikely that there'll be a lot of sharing of data before it's made public. Unlikely is a soft word. It's not going to happen. But there is a way in which I think there's a very useful collaboration that can go on. And I think that this photon plus jets method of trying to understand the missing ET from Zeta to Mu is a pretty good example of that. There, the uncertainty is really systematic. I'm trying to figure out how much of an assumption are you making that your photon, your one vector boson versus the other vector boson,
yep.
is actually an appropriate scaling. If there are ways that we can make some simple standard model measurements very quickly with 10 inverse picobarns that understand the PDF uncertainties, fragmentation, whatever else there is, can tell us a way to make that systematic smaller, I think that can make a big difference in whether we can make an early discovery using this method while maybe you had too big of a systematic outcome. And that's a place where I think there's a lot of opportunity for process.
Okay. We need lots of discussion time at coffee break, so I'm not going to cut the coffee break short, even though we're 15 minutes behind, so that we can interact with the coffee break. So let's meet back here at 10:45. Back here. We're just going over here.
Sounds like a big
those of you